Thank you for joining us. It's really a pleasure to learn together with everyone once again, and I hope you enjoyed the time away from me, which I'm sure is very important for all of you as well. So as we know, we are coming closer to Rosh Hashanah, and there is a lot to discuss as we come closer to Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, Yom HaKippurim, the Yimei HaSlichos, Yimei HaRachamim, and there are many different topics to discuss. Of course, the most obvious of them is going to be the topic of Tshuva, but there is something that presents itself this year, which is about the issue of Rosh Hashanah Shecholios B'Shabbos. And this is a very important subject to be aware of and to be cognizant of. What are the issues involved and why is it that we do not blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shecholios B'Shabbos? Now, the mazel has it that Rosh Hashanah is a two-day Yom Tov, and as a result of that, we end up blowing shofar on the second day when the first day falls out on Shabbos. But obviously, this is a centerpiece of our davening, the Tkiah Shofar. And it's something that is obviously going to be very lacking and missing in the davening. So let's try to talk about what that's about. I think we're going to discuss it this week, and then we're going to follow up next week with a very, very fascinating story and an important historical issue, halachic historical issue, about the blowing of the shofar in Yerushalayim bizman hazeh, when there is no Beis Hamikdash. Would there be a special dispensation to blow the shofar in Yerushalayim on Rosh Hashanah Shecholios B'Shabbos? Or would you say that Yerushalayim has the same status as all of our communities in Chutz La'aretz that do not blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So let's begin. Mehakal el hakavei. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chavtes Amud Beis. Amar Rava, Tkiyah Shofar Midaraisa. As far as the Torah is concerned, you would be allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls on any day of the week, as well as Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbos. There would be no distinction, there would be no difference at all. The shofar should always be blown. However, says the Gemara, Chazal came along and they were concerned. What was their concern? They were worried, Shema Yavirenu Dalad Amos B'Shus HaRabim. They were concerned that somebody is going to be designated as the Baal Tokeya on Rosh Hashanah. He's not going to be adequately prepared for the Tkios. He doesn't really know how to do so. And therefore, we're concerned that maybe on Shabbos, without an Erev outside, he's going to take the shofar, go run on Shabbos morning, which is Rosh Hashanah, to somebody's house to teach him how to blow the shofar, and then come back to shul, and because of that, there is a concern that he's going to violate an Isser De'oraisa of Hotza'ah on Shabbos. Because we don't want him to do that, therefore the Gemara says, we have basically abolished the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shecholios B'Shabbos. How do Chazal have a right to do that? The Torah tells us you should blow Shofar. The Chachamim come along and say, we're concerned for some kind of outside external reason that we don't want you to blow shofar. How did they just get rid of a mitzvah midaraisa? How can that be? Says the Gemara, Yesh koach biyad chachamim lakar davim en haTorah b'sheva al tasa. The chachamim do have a right to get rid of a mitzvah in the Torah temporarily, not to totally get rid of it, but under certain circumstances. For example, this case, when we have in a specific situation, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, chachamim have a right to make a takana b'sheva al tasa, which means we should hold back from doing a mitzvah. The Chacham don't have a right to say b'kum va'aseh to do something against the Torah, but they have a right to say b'sheva al taseh, we should abstain from doing the mitzvah. That is the story with Rosh Hashanah Shecholios B'Shabbos. This is a Gemara that is not only limited to Rosh Hashanah and the blowing the shofar on Shabbos, but it is something that expands far beyond that. The Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah, a halacha that we're all familiar with, Sukkah, we have a mitzvah that we're supposed to not only sit in the Sukkah, but we're supposed to shake the Dalet Minim. Says the Gemara, what happens when you have one of the days of Sukkot that falls out on Shabbos, which happens every year? So what do you do then? Says the Gemara, there's a concern that maybe somebody is not going to know how to do the Nanuim. Happens all the time that people come to shul, they don't know exactly how to do it, they're not following how other people are doing it. So maybe you're going to go early in the morning on Shabbos with your Dalet Minim, you're going to carry them Bershus HaRabim and violate the Isra of Hotzah. And therefore, Chazal said, when Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, we do not take the Dalet Minim, even though the Torah would expect us to do so. There's a very interesting Gemara, Maseches Beitzah, where the Gemara there discusses a different halacha. The Gemara, Maseches Beitzah, is generally talking about Hilchos Yom Tov. But there is a lot of overlap between Shabbos and Yom Tov, different melechos, different things that are allowed, some things that are not allowed. And the Gemara in Beitzah goes back and forth between different scenarios, different halachas, where we would say something is similar and something is perhaps potentially different. So the Gemara there writes, what happens with a person who has a bunch of utensils that are new that have to be toveled in the mikveh? Would I be allowed to tovel those items on Shabbos or Yom Tov? So the Gemara gets into a machlokas beis Shammai and beis Hillel. Would it be allowed on Yom Tov? Would it be allowed on Shabbos? In the end of the day, the Gemara says that everybody agrees that on Shabbos, you would not be allowed to tovel kelim in the mikvah. Why not? What's the problem? Why is there a concern to be tovel kelim in the mikvah? Says the Gemara, the concern is, how are you going to get the kelim from your house to the mikvah? Obviously, the most simple way to do that is by carrying them. You're not going to bring them before Shabbos and leave them outside the mikvah. Someone's going to steal them. And therefore, the Gemara says, because there's a concern that maybe Shema Yavirenu Dal Adams B'Shus HaRabim, by bringing them to the mikvah, therefore the Gemara says we would not be allowed to go ahead and tovel the kelim on Shabbos, even if a person has an Erev in their town, and even if you brought them before Shabbos and you left them outside of the mikvah and everything is set up before, we would still say you're not allowed to. The Gemara there happens to mention a dissenting opinion, which is that of Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef disagrees with Rabbah, and he says, no, that's not the reason why. If I have an Erev in my community, or if I left them by the mikvah before Shabbos, what's the concern? Why shouldn't I be allowed to? And Rabbi Yosef says, perhaps there's another reason why. Some of the Amoraim right there, that perhaps the reason why is Shema Yasha. Imagine if a person, I just spoke to a Chassan and Kala who got married last week, and I asked them, so how was your day? They said, well, we spent the whole day at the mikvah. As we know, when somebody gets married, they have to set up a house, they buy all the dishes, they buy all the pots and pans, and a lot of times they're spending hours and hours and hours by the mikvah, taking off stickers, putting it in. So imagine if they say to themselves, you know, we're both in school, we're both at work, we have too much to do, why don't we save all of this for Shabbos? Shabbos, we can't go to work anyway. Says the Gemara, Gzeira Shema Yasha, we're concerned, is that really an uplifting, meaningful experience of Shabbos if you're going to be spending it at the mikvah all day, dipping different utensils in and peeling off stickers? Says the Gemara, Gzeira Shema Yasha, because we're concerned that maybe you're going to leave over all of your work from during the week as far as the mikvah is concerned, and you're only going to limit it to Shabbos, that is going to destroy your whole experience of Shabbos. And therefore, says the Gemara, that is what the other reason why we would say that you're not allowed to tovel kelim b'Shabbos. Be it as it may, we find another example where the Gemara tells us that you would not be allowed to do something on Shabbos because of Gzeira Shema Yavirenu, we're concerned. And the most famous of all the examples is the Gemara Maseches Megillah, where the Gemara tells us that if Purim falls out on Shabbos, as we know, we are not supposed to lay in the Megillah on Shabbos because we're concerned, Shema Yavirenu, David Amos B'Shus HaRabim. It so happens the Gemara there also has a dissenting opinion again of Rabbi Yosef, who disagrees with Rabbah, and he says, no, the reason why we're not allowed to read the Megillah on Shabbos when Purim Chalias B'Shabbos is not because of your concern, Shema Yavirenu. You think the person who's supposed to lay in the Megillah didn't prepare in advance? He's not going to run out Shabbos morning with his Megillah to learn how to do it. Of course he knows how to do it already. The reason why he says is because it's amazing. The sensitivity, says Rabbi Yosef, Mipnei she'eneim shel ha'aniyim nesuos l'mikra Megillah. All of the aniyim know that when it comes time to mikra Megillah, you can walk around the shul and everybody's going to be much more generous than they otherwise would be any other day of the year. So what's going to happen? We're going to observe Purim on Shabbos, and then the aniyim are going to be stuck. They can't collect money on Shabbos. So that's not fair. Which is a very interesting svara that the Gemara says. And because of that, we're going to push off the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and we're going to say we cannot do it on Shabbos, even though the proper time to do it would have been Shabbos, but we would say we're not allowed to do it because it's unfair to cheat from the aniyim. I find it interesting that this is what the Gemara says, and yet you talk to people, and they're annoyed that on Purim we have so many people collecting, and we have so many people coming around, and there are members of our community who fly down to Florida, and they say, you know, we don't want a beer, we don't want to deal with this. What is chus? What an amazing opportunity we have. Einayim shel ha'aniyim are nesuos l'mikra Megillah. The aniyim are looking forward to the opportunity that all of us are going to have an open heart, that all of us are going to have an open hand, and we're going to be much more generous than we otherwise would be. And because of that, we're even willing to push off the mitzvah of mikra Megillah. It should tell us a little bit about what the objective of Purim is really all about. Now, Tosis asked the question. You mentioned all of these examples. You talked about Mikra Megillah on Shabbos. You talked about Shofar on Shabbos. You talked about Dalad Minim on Shabbos. You talked about this example of Tovel and Kalim B'Shabbos. And all of those we say follow the same rule, which is you cannot do them because Shema Yavirenu. Ask Tosas, you ever went to a Bris on Shabbos? Why don't we push over Bris Milah? We should push over Bris Milah. After all, aren't we concerned that maybe the Moel is going to take all of his utensils that he needs to perform the Bris Milah properly, and he's going to carry them outside without an Erev? If we're willing to push, and don't say, well, Bris Milah is a mitzvah midaraisa, what do you mean? Well, so is Shofar, and so is Lulav, And we have other precedents where we find that we push off a mitzvah midaraisa in order to make sure that we don't violate the iser of hotzah b'shabbos. So Tosfos asks the obvious question, why do we not push off the mitzvah of bris milah when the Yom HaShmini falls out on Shabbos? We should follow the same logic as we find everywhere else. And Tosfos gives two answers. Number one, says Tosfos, because bris milah is something that is not just a regular mitzvah midaraisa. Bris milah is something that is a category in a league of its own. Says the Gemara, it is nichrusu aleh yud gimel brisos, 13 different times HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us promise. This is the covenant between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, says the Bali Atosas, this is something that is in a league of its own. And therefore, we wouldn't simply be able to push it away like Shofar or Dalad Minim or something of that nature. We would say Bris Milah would override the Isser of Hotzah B'Shabbos. And secondly, Tosas says, what is the whole concern? The concern is, maybe you're going to wake up on the morning of Purim. Maybe you're going to wake up on the morning of Rosh Hashanah. Maybe you're going to wake up the morning of Sukkot and you're not going to know how to blow shofar. You're not going to know how to lay in the Megillah. You're not going to know how to shake the lulav. And therefore, you're going to go to someone to teach you. Do you think a mohel would accept upon himself to be the mohel at a bris? And then in the morning, Shabbos morning, he wakes up and he says, you know, I agreed to be a mohel at a bris and I have no idea what I'm doing. I better run to somebody who can teach me how to do this mitzvah. I would hope that that mohel would not show up later on in the afternoon and say, okay, I'm ready. And therefore, says the Bali Atosas, it's so unlikely that he's going to go quickly to rush to someone's house to teach him how to do it. Doesn't make sense. And therefore, the Bali Atosas say, that is something that we don't have to be concerned with. I found a very fascinating question that is raised by the Stechemet. It's a question that he says, I think, in the name of the Netziv. I saw it a couple of years ago. But the Stechemet wonders, we know that on Leil HaSeder, we have many specifications about how exactly you're supposed to eat the matzah, how you eat the maror, when you eat the matzah, which part of the Seder. We know that you're supposed to have 2 cups of wine before, 2 cups of wine after, and everything is very specific in the order of how we do it, which is why it's called a Seder. There is a very specific order and function of everything at the Seder, and the way that it comes to the table, comes off the table. So why don't we have a concern if Pesach Shechalias B'Shabbos, why shouldn't we be concerned that somebody's going to take his matzah and maror, Leil HaSeder, he's going to go run to the rabbi's house and say, I don't know what I'm doing. It's my first time having a Seder. I'm first time home without other family members. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never really done this. I only went along with what the Seder was, and I really don't know how to follow. So maybe you can help me do it. He's going to run to the rabbi's house with his matzah and maror, and he's going to violate the Isser of Hotzah B'Shabbos. Why don't we say that if Pesach Shechalias B'Shabbos, we should cancel the mitzvah of matzah and maror as well? Very interesting question. It is discussed in the Stechemed. Fascinating, but not enough time to discuss it right now. There is a very interesting discussion in the Bir Halacha. Bir Halacha is the Mishneh Berurah's commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. And in the Bir Halacha, meaning in the Mishneh Berurah, he usually gives comments on the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. He basically expands what the background of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah are, and what's the bottom line Halacha. In the Bir Halacha, it's not really so Halacha Lamaisa. The Bir Halacha gives more of bigger questions. He asks, you know, bigger questions that we need to think about in the sugya. So when you're dealing with this and this issue on Shabbos, when you're dealing with this malacha, the Mishneh Berurah will tell you what the bottom line of the halacha is, and in the Bir Halacha, he will expand on some of the theological issues behind it, on some of the stiras that you find, contradictions between this malacha, the other malacha, this issue, that issue. That's something that he expands upon in the Bir Halacha. So here, in the Bir Halacha, he raises a very important issue, and that is something that we need to drop a background in order to appreciate. His question is a very, very poignant one. So he writes, how do we define what a Rishus HaRabim is? How exactly do we figure out what a Rishus HaRabim is? So he works on the following premise, which everyone agrees to, and that is, all of the Melechas of Shabbos are learned from the Melechas HaMishkan. The Torah tells us that there were certain ways that they had to build the Mishkan in the days of Moshe Rabbein. From there, we learn in Parshas Vayakal B'Kudei, from there we learn that whatever was done in the efforts to construct the Mishkan are what we pattern off all of the malachos of Shabbos bizman hazeh. So all the 39 malachos are things that were done in the times of the Mishkan to construct it, and therefore today that is the parallel to our Hilchos Shabbos. The same goes when it comes to the malacha of Hotzah. When the Torah says you're not allowed to take something out of your house and be maver dalet amos b'shus haram, you're not allowed to go into a public sphere and carry something from one domain to another domain on Shabbos. How do we figure out what is the definition of a Rishus HaRabim? Do we assume that every place outside of my house is officially, automatically considered a Rishus HaRabim? Of course not. So we look back to the days of the Mishkan, and we try to figure out what was the definition, what was the characteristic that defined a Rishus HaRabim back then? Well, where were they in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu? Where were they?
Midbar.
In the Midbar. So how do you define a Rishus HaRabim in the Midbar? Says the Gemara, you look around at the space that they had, and we take from that to what a Rishus HaRabim in our generation should be considered as well. Number one, says the Gemara, that in order to be defined as a Rishus HaRabim, it has to be Tes Zayin Amma. Why? It has to be 16 Amas wide, because in the days of the Mishkan, the Gemara goes through a whole calculation, how they got to that number, but they used to have to bring the agalim that were carrying all of the different instruments, the different items for the Mishkan. They used to have to travel through the camp in order to get to the middle, which was the center place of the Mishkan. And in order to get there, you needed to have 16 Amos. And therefore, from there we learn, in order to be Rishus HaRabim, it has to be 16 Amos. How much is 16 Amos? Okay, what's the general consensus? 32 feet, let's say, 35 feet, something of that nature. Now, how wide is our road here? Let's say Peninsula Boulevard is how wide?
More than
35 feet. But if you go to a smaller part of the neighborhood, sometimes you can have a street. Even though it's a public space, even though it's a public domain, it's not my house, it's not your house, it's something that's shared with all of us, and our cars driving through, sometimes it will not be 16 amos. That's possible. So therefore, that would automatically not be a Rishus HaRabim. So now let's take, for example, we're dealing with Peninsula Boulevard. Peninsula Boulevard is 16 amos. Does that mean that it is now considered automatically a Rishus HaRabim? Does that mean if I take something from my house or from the shul, and I walk out to Peninsula Boulevard, which is a big thoroughfare, and I carry something on Shabbos, does that mean I violated an Issur D'Oraisa because that is larger than 16 amos? No. Why not? Because the Rishonim say you have to look at other characteristics of what was in the times of the Mishkan in order to define what a Rishus HaRabim actually is. Number one, the Gemara is not clear exactly how we define it, but this is something that is debated by the Rishonim. And there is a large group of Rishonim, of major Rishonim, the Bahag, Rashi, the Rosh, the Smag, and others who all believe that the only way to have a definition of a Rishus HaRabim is not only by having 16 Amos, that of course is a prerequisite, but let's say we're dealing with Peninsula Boulevard, which is 16 Amos, it's still not a Rishus HaRabim unless it has 600,000 people who travel on that road. Why? What? Oh, so one second. That's the further question. You need 600,000 people who travel on this road. Why? Because as we know, in the days of the Mishkan, how large was the male population in the days of the Mishkan who were traveling back and forth from their tents to the Mishkan? 600,000 men. And they were the ones who were going back and forth on Shabbos, as the Mefarshim say, to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu Shir. They were going to build the Mishkan. They were back and forth doing whatever they needed to do. So they had 600,000 people traveling on these roads that were 16 amos wide. If you don't have that, the Rishonim say, it's not considered a Rishus HaRabim. Now you asked a very important question. How long is the time span that you need to have 600,000 people traveling through? Does that mean 600,000 people a day? Does that mean 600,000 people a month? Does that mean 600,000 people a year? How do we define it? Again, that is a further machlokas of Rishonim. If you put all that together, the bottom line that the Shulchan Aruch writes is, Ein lanu din Rishus HaRabim mizman hazeh. We basically don't have a Rishus HaRabim today because we don't have this reality. We have what's called a no man's land, like the street is now called a Carmelis. It's not a Rishus HaYachid because it's not my personal home. It's not a Rishus HaRabim because it's not 16 Amos and we don't have 600,000 people on it, especially every day. But when you think about it, the Shulchan Aruch writes, we generally assume Ein lanu din Rishus HaRabim bizman hazeh. And that comes up in many different contexts that we assume there is no real din of Rishus HaRabim mida araisa bizman hazeh. Take, for example, if you go to Manhattan, though, and you go to Broadway, Times Square, and you talk about that, and that is 16 Amos, and you do have, I assume you have 600,000 people every single day that are passing through that place, that would certainly be Rishus HaRabim, but that is very rare. I don't know what the numbers are here. Probably not, right? Probably not 600,000 people. I'm not so familiar. Ari, what is it here? How many people pass by here? Less? I assume it's less. Fair to say that it's less? So we assume in most locations, even if it's a big thoroughfare, it's not necessarily going to be a Rishus HaRabim Midaraisa, except for those very unique exceptions, like the middle of Midtown Manhattan, if you have a major thoroughfare somewhere else, a major square somewhere, that would be very different. But otherwise, we assume that Ein lanu din Rishus HaRabim Mizman Hazeh, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes, that's what the Rama says in Hilchos Erev, in Hilchos Shabbos, and that's the assumption. Based on that, the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir HaHalacha ask a very important question. Why do we not blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. Because we're concerned, maybe you're going to violate an Issa D'Araisa. Why are you going to violate an Issa D'Araisa? I'm going to wake up Rosh Hashanah morning, I'm going to realize I don't know how to blow the shofar, I'm going to grab the shofar, go to somebody's house to teach me how to blow, and then I'm going to violate the Issa of Hotzah by walking with the shofar outside in the Rosh Hashanah. But if you assume that Ein Lanu Din Rosh Hashanah Mizman Hazeh, if you assume that there is no real Rosh Hashanah in our generation, then what's the concern? At worst, you're going to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan. So the Issa D'Rabbanan of carrying outside on Shabbos is enough to say we should get rid of the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar on Rosh Hashanah? How can that be?
When the Rabbanan made it, it's like flood already. Once they make the, there was an Eretz Yisrael what we considered Rosh Hashanah, right? There was a Rosh Hashanah.
Where? But where?
No, I'm saying in Eretz Yisrael when the, when they made all the Takanas, they had to
keep the Rosh Hashanah. They used to have to keep the doors closed to keep that contained.
That Yerushalayim is a different story. Yerushalayim is a different story, and Yerushalayim, we assume, is much more populated than other places. But the question is, for most of us, it's what we refer to as a Milsa de lo Shchicha. Most of the time when you have such an unusual scenario, how many Jews live in Times Square and are going to be there on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos and are going to be concerned that maybe they're going to run outside? 99.5% of the Jews in the world don't have that problem. So then why is there a gzera? We should go back to the basics and say, if the Torah said to blow shofar on Shabbos, then we should blow shofar on Shabbos. If the Torah said to shake lulav on Shabbos, we should do that. If the Torah said to do all these things on Shabbos, we should. So why do we take it away just because of a concern of Hotzah, when in fact the Hotzah is not even an Issa D'Araisa because we don't have this concern of a Rosh Hashanah D'Araisa. Very, very interesting question. Rabbi Kiva Eger raises another thing for us to think about, and that is, Rabbi Kiva Eger wonders, what is the halacha in general? If the Torah says it's a big sugya, Maseches Tmura. Maseches Tmura is a Masechta that most people have never heard of unless you learn the Daf Yomi, but certainly most people have never really delved into it. In the very beginning of Maseches Temura, the Gemara has a few Daf Gemara in a row that discuss the following sugya: Kol Milsa Di Amar Achmana Lo Savid, I Avid Mahani, or I Lavid Lo Mahani. It's a Machlokes Amaray. When the Torah tells me not to do something, let's say I go ahead and I do it, should I assume that what I have done is good, it worked, or not? Let me give you a simple example. Torah says you're not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. Why are you not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos? It's a Malacha, Netilas Neshama. Netilas Neshama. Okay, so you can't kill an animal on Shabbos. Let's say a shochet goes and kills an animal on Shabbos, and he shechs the animal properly. So would we assume that because he violated Shabbos, not only should he get punished for violating Shabbos, but also whatever shechita he did is as if it wasn't shechted? Obviously the animal's dead. And there's no way...
If you cook on Shabbos, it's going to cook on Shabbos.
Yeah.
So are you allowed to use it?
It's the same question. It's a different question. The question there about cooking is, would we make a knas in order to deter you from doing it next time? Here the question is, would the halachic status of the animal change? Before this was shechted, it was considered to be something that was off limits for me to eat.
Right.
Now that it's shechted, the halachic status is supposed to change. But maybe because the only way that that status change came about is because he violated the halacha itself, maybe the halachic status will not change. That's the Gemara's question. It goes back and forth. My focus is on Rabbi,
so
I think...
You're telling me that if you shecht on Shabbos, we should consider the animal trade.
That's the question. Should so we assume... Should we assume...
When I cook on Shabbos, why isn't the food trade?
That's the question.
Is it trade for if you use it the next day, it may be kosher?
That's exactly the Gemara's question.
I think
it's about three or four block Gemara that go back and forth about this. Each one brings a raya to the sugya. So Rabbi Kiva Eger raises the possibility here. What would the halacha be? Gadol shetokea b'Shabbos. Let's say you have somebody, and the reason I mention this now is because it's going to be a lead up to our discussion next week. Gadol shetokea b'Shabbos. We know for certainty, the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos, you don't blow the shofar. Let's say you have a wise guy who gets up and he says, I don't care what the rabbis say, I'm going to blow the shofar anyway. Now, he's doing it wrong. He's not supposed to do that, but he does it anyway. And I know that I have a neighbor who's a wise guy, and I know he's going to blow the shofar Rosh Hashanah morning. So I decide, you know what, I'm not going to go to shul today. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to listen outside the window because I want to have the mitzvah tkiyah shofar. Ask Rabbi Kiva Eger, will I even have any mitzvah at all? If this person is doing something that the Torah does not want him to do, but he's going to do it anyway, would we assume that is considered to be like a mitzvah of tkiyah shofar or not. Now again, I don't want that guy being my bal tokeya.
There's no chiyuv.
That's his question. Do we say there's no chiyuv?
That's what the rabbanan is saying.
That's the question. So he writes over here, gadol shatokeya b'shabbos kiyem mitzvah shofar b'zmano el da'avar al shvus b'shabbos. You did something wrong. You get a slap on the wrist. You shouldn't have done it. But Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that this is something that would be considered a mitzvah that was fulfilled on Shabbos. Interesting. Now, if Rabbi Kiva Eger is correct, then each one of us should make our own cheshbon. I'm going to have to someday stand in front of God in judgment about everything I did in my life. Halavai, the only argument I should have with him is when I tried to do a mitzvah on shofar on Shabbos that I shouldn't have done, halavai, that should be the only part of the discussion that I have to worry about when the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to ask me questions. But let's say I'm trying to figure out what's the right thing for me to do. Now I have Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah. The rabbis tell me, don't blow shofar. The Torah tells me, do blow shofar. So, if I decide not to listen to the Chachamim, and I blow the shofar anyway, what's the net gain and the net loss? What's going to happen? What happens? I violated the Issa D'Rabbanan, and I fulfill the mitzvah Midaraisa.
Not really.
So which one's better? Rabbi Kiva Eger says, if you are an Avarian, if you did something you shouldn't have done, in the end of the day, it's as if you did the mitzvah Tkiyah shofar. Ah, you violated the Takaras Chacham? Okay, you violated Takaras Chacham, but still, it's considered to be a mitzvah.
But isn't part of the kaya for the Rabban is that when they make these Takanas, the ipso facto, there's no more mitzvah.
Oh, that's part of along comes the Chalkas Yoav, who's a Talmud of the Avni Nezer, and he writes, he has an amazing sefer called Kaba de Kashyaisa. Kaba de Kashyaisa is a number of questions that he had on different sugas of Shas, and it's printed in a beautiful sefer today called Kaba de Kashyaisa. So he writes, Ra'isi davar tamua lahagon Rabbi Kiva Eger. I saw something absolutely shocking that Rabbi Kiva Eger writes. What does he say? Dipshitalei, that it's obvious to Rabbi Kiva Eger, im taka b'shofar b'shabbos, after avar al shvus, mikamako ha mitzvah neskai b'diyevet. Rabbi Kiva Eger is of the opinion that even if you violated the Issa d'Rabbanan of blowing shofar on Shabbos, you still fulfilled the mitzvah nidaraisa. Avo miyod pela algon kamosa shiomar davar kazet. I agree that Rabbi Kiva Eger is a tremendous gon and a tzaddik, but I don't understand that we can say such a thing. He brings rayas and he proves that this is not the case. If you do something that you shouldn't have done, even if the reason you shouldn't do it is only midrabanan, but still, it means you're not supposed to do it. And if you do it, you get no credit. You don't get credit for blowing shofar when you're not supposed to. It's as if you didn't blow shofar. And that is a very interesting issue that we're going to have to get into next week as we talk about the story that happened in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. I don't know how many people are familiar with it. A very fascinating historical machlokes that broke out about what the status of Yerushalayim is when you have Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos. Would Yerushalayim potentially have a different story, a different status than every other place in Chutz La'aretz? And would you say that maybe the rules should change? And let's say you believe that Yerushalayim should not have a different status, but somebody else believes Yerushalayim should. So should I go out of my way to hear the shofar from that person in Yerushalayim or not? That's the question we're going to have to discuss next week. Mirtz Hashem, I look forward to learning together with everyone.